Well, welcome everybody to the Words Matter podcast. We are here in Brooklyn, beautiful Brooklyn, overlooking Flatbush Avenue from the Gentleman's Factory. And I have a very special guest with me, Omar D. Hardware.
Yo, what's up, everybody?
Omar is a prolific writer. He's an auteur, director, film writer, screenwriter, author of novels, of fiction novels. And we are from the same hometown, Spring Valley, New York. So, you know, it's major to be here. Thank you for coming out.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so, you know, who are you?
Just like you said, my name is Omar. I'm from Harvey. Who am I? It's a tough question. I'm still finding that out every day. I wake up every day trying to figure out who I am. So I can't give you a definite answer. But as of right now, I'm a creative.
Yeah. And do you come from a background of writers?
Hell no. No. None of my family members are like writers. Are, you know, think like no one from my background do what I do.
I mean, as a writer, you know, you don't have that background, but I know. A lot of times our parents are very big on education and grammar and punctuation. You know, even if it's not something you may have noticed while it was happening, as a kid, do you think that your experiences, say writing an essay or something, kind of put you in the direction of eventually becoming a writer? I know my mom used to proofread my essays with a red pen.
Yeah, so my mother, she worked double jobs like my entire life. Mm-hmm. So like, as my sister would be the one who would actually grade my stuff. And it's funny that you say that. I had my sister like overshadowed me pretty much all the way up until she went to college. Mm-hmm. And I would say I started middle school around that time.
Yeah.
So from the time she left, I didn't really have, I didn't have a tutor at home.
Yeah.
Like someone I could go to. Like my mom went back to someone who was always working. And she, when she had time, of course she would look at stuff, but at the same time, these are new things that she didn't understand as well, you know what I mean? So it was kind of a, by the time I got to like middle school, it was kind of a free for me. But up until then, I definitely had my sister overshadowing me regarding my education.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Takes a village.
Definitely take a village.
Yeah.
My sister is the one, so even with like my passion for writing really came from just like my passion for storytelling. And that came from my sister as well. We used to share a room growing up. And she would have me watch all different type of movies and shows that my friends were watching. And whenever I would have time to like really tap into what she was into, I would figure out like, this stuff is actually cool. Is this all right? It has a message and it's better than, if it's not better than reading a book, it's as good as reading a book, because I still walk away with something, you know what I mean? And that always kept with me growing up. That got me into binge watching and writing on different type of anything that comes to my mind.
What were those influences when you were young and you were binge watching? Because were you binge watching things as a kid, or did you? Because that's a term that I really didn't start hearing until streaming services came about. You know, binge watching shows. But back in the day when we were kids, something came out, that was it, and you had to catch a rerun.
Exactly. So I wouldn't really call it band watching, but unless he was catching a marathon.
Yeah.
Of a show. But she had me, for me and my friends growing up, the only thing that I would stay up for was actually wrestling.
Yeah.
Or like King and Kelly and stuff like that, all that. But she had me looking for serious shows.
Yeah.
Like more things with a message, more things about life. And I want to say, like, my first book, as far as even like Blood Cousin, my first book was inspired from the Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, wow.
She had me watch that weekly, you know what I mean? And I never understood, I never really understood the whole vampire world until I really tapped into that. And I realized a lot of the TV shows, even today, mirror their storyline to an extent. But there's numerous of shows, movies. She used to just take me out on regular, like on random Fridays and shit. She would take me to the movie theaters to go watch whatever it's out. And it would just keep me open-minded. They always keep me open-minded. About what's out there in the world. You know what I mean? Yeah.
That was your education outside of just the traditional academic, academia, school.
I always believed, so like, I was one of those students who, I wasn't academically bad in school,
yeah.
I wasn't on the honor roll, you know what I mean? And a part of that, I blamed myself because my sister set a high standard,
yeah.
You know what I mean? She was on the honor roll, principal list, and I can compete with any of that. Like, growing up, I was looking at it like, I'd rather be myself, and if I can get it, then I'm right. And if I don't, I'm not gonna beat myself over the head and not understanding this stuff. Because what I realized in if you pay attention to history books, anybody that's in the history book, nobody followed the rules.
Like, yeah.
Anyone that you learn about, they never followed the rules, and their talents don't stop at what other people limit them to. So like, I always kept that in my mind.
And keeping that in your mind, was that a thing that, so it didn't discourage you as a kid that you weren't the best student, because you always kept it in your mind that the world changes,
for some reason,
break the rules.
Yeah, for some reason I always knew, I'm not gonna say school doesn't matter, but I always knew school wasn't what they pushed us to believe, because half of the stuff we was learning, my family wasn't doing it on the regular. Like, you know, like a lot of the stuff that we was learning, it didn't help my family make money. Like, it didn't help anything. Like, you know what I mean? And, one of my first questions I used to always ask my teachers in general is like, I would sit down and I'd be like, how is this gonna help me in life? And if they can't give me an answer that satisfied like my curiosity, I'm gonna stray away for a semester. And once it actually matters if I'm gonna pass or not, then I will scrape. Toward the end of the semester, I'm gonna scrape myself up and I'm gonna get my grades. But if you as my teacher can't tell me how is this gonna help me in life, then I feel like this is a distraction. And I can't give you my all, if you know what I mean. If I can't figure out how is this gonna serve me, our future, it's a distraction.
Yeah, you know, speaking of distractions, you said that with your sister, by the time she was in college and you got to middle school, high school, it was more of a free-for-all. Explain that.
So, with that being said, we all used to have a shared fear of our parents seeing our report cards and progress reports and stuff like that. So like without an older sibling who's always, like my mom's angel, who's always shadowing me, there was no alert for her to know when things are there or not, you know what I mean? Like she would know, of course my parents would know when they should be receiving it.
Mm-hmm.
But without someone there telling them that it's there, it's a beat for all, like I'm on my own. Like, you know what I mean? My parents are working 24/7, so they're not going to no parent-teacher conference. They're not talking to no teachers unless, you know what I mean, like it's urgent.
Yeah.
Like it's a free-for-all at this point. That's what I mean by that. My grade is totally up to me. If I want to pass, not to say that my parents are disappointed. If anyone broke into their home, they know how it is. Like they know how it is. But like once I took control of that, it was a matter of to me if I wanted to pass or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like growing up, it's funny because growing up you get attached to different things. Like I always wanted to just be outside, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
I didn't wanna read books. I didn't wanna read books. You can like I read, but don't get me wrong, I read growing up. I didn't read what the school was giving me. I would read what my sister was reading.
What was she reading?
Reading like insane books and things of that sort. And that actually sparked my mom because they were writing, they had a different writing style than what they were teaching us in school. And that's when it's like it.
It was more relatable to you, that content?
It was easier to read.
Yeah.
They were talking in slangs, you know what I mean? And it was just, it was funnier, it was more entertaining, it was more about life, you know what I mean? Not that when we wasn't reading in school wasn't about life, but it was
easier. The life that you can see on a regular basis, you saw it in those books.
It was easier to attach, it was easier to catch my attention and keep it. You know what I mean? I feel like schools, if we had an easier way of teaching, or like, you know what I mean? It would be easier for me. I still graduated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I feel like, then again, I am different too. I was always a free thinker. And when somebody say, this has to be this way, I'm always going to be the person that questions why it has to be that way. Mm-hmm. I'm a difficult one. I've always been a difficult one.
This is more into that free-for-all era. Do you think that if you didn't experience that in your teens, would you ever become who you are now as a writer?
Every part of my life, maybe on my end, every part of it, from my family members to my friends to my cousins to my coworkers to everybody that I came across. I don't know who I would have been if I, you know how people say if I went back in time, even at that, you wouldn't even know who you are, you know, because those life lessons that you learn during those processes, they help you be who you are, you know what I mean? And I don't know, I just, everything made me who I am, because even, like, the stories, most of my stories that I come up with are relatable through my experiences outside, just being outside.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Some of that's inside, you can be as creative as possible, but you can't relate to what's really going on. You know what I mean? And the fact that I am able to write stories and I am able to sit down and read something, it makes me feel like, what's the word? Makes me feel valuable in my own way. You know what I mean? It makes me feel like I can give my life purpose.
Yeah.
Like I could actually make a difference.
Yeah, because there's other people like you in the world, and other people can see the value in what you do. I mean, there's so many people in the world, but a lot of our experiences, a lot of our environments are the same. And people have come from similar backgrounds. So, yeah, so, relatability is definitely a key. How hard is it to write a book?
Sorry. Well, actually, it all depends on you. It all depends on you and your writing process and what are you trying to tell the world. My first book was fun. It was, not that it was, I compared it to, but my first book was fun because it was an exciting process for me. I've never put my creativity to the test.
Yeah.
And even like with that whole process, anyone that was around me, because no one around, like I said, no one from my family, none of my friends, no one I grew up with was writers. So anyone that was around me was getting drawn into reading what I'm writing. Mm-hmm. You can't spend 20 minutes around me and I'm not giving you my laptop and asking you to read this.
Yeah.
I want an honest opinion. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm okay with constructive criticism. So,
Try to interrupt, but do you, you said you can't spend 20 minutes around you and, you know, if you're writing something on your laptop, you have to give it to that person, but does it matter who is around you? Because, you know, you might not value everyone's opinion when it comes to certain topics in life, but you value their opinions when it comes to other topics, but as far as like literature and film.
So, when I wrote my first book, my social life went down crazy.
Yeah.
So, I couldn't maintain all of that. It was a set few people that were seeing me. That night, everybody could see me Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I had to be stupid on my time schedule. I had to be stupid on my life. You know what I mean? When I say anybody, I mean like my boys, you know what I mean? Family members who I would see during the big process. A lot of people, they didn't hear from me. They're like, oh, Omar is funny, this and that.
Yeah.
I'm working on my, you know what I mean? I'm working on the whole story. I gotta come up with these motherfuckers, these characters' story. You know what I mean? I gotta come up with their life. You know what I mean? So I gotta take a step away from mine and give these people a voice and I gotta come up with a whole story that makes sense and give you a message. You know what I mean? And it's, life don't stop, you know what I mean? So like, I still got bills, I still got people that I wanna see, I still got things that I gotta accomplish as well. It'd be difficult sometimes.
What does your sister think, you know, you being a writer now
she's dope, she thinks I'm dope. Because this is something that no one would expect. If you had known me 10 years ago, yeah, everybody doing the 10-year challenge, if you had known me 10 years ago, you would never have thought.
What would people 10 years ago say now that they see you doing this?
They probably thought I joined the Illuminati or
something.
But nah, everyone's proud. And that's like the most, best part about it. Is that you actually have genuine love from people around you. And that's the best thing. That's really the best thing about it.
Was there anyone you knew locally maybe that could have possibly influenced you?
Hell yeah. There was this girl named Flo. She wrote a poetry book.
I went to high school with her.
Yeah, she wrote a poetry book. And I know that my best friend is married to her best friend. So I knew her since then. And when she wrote that poetry book, I remember going to her book signing and I remember I looked at her and I was like, bro, you're fucking dope. Because this is different. And I remember I read a few pages of it and I looked to myself like, all right. that she did. She told me on the side, she told me how she did it. And I said, you know what? Not that moment, but I knew that I could really make my own book. But it wasn't until I watched it, I said it earlier, it wasn't until I watched it at a company, I was like, you know, I'm taking my vision to my own hands. And she definitely was part of that inspiration as well.
Was it just because of she was local and she was talented? And you saw herself in, you saw yourself in her? Or, like, what was it specifically?
I definitely saw myself in her. I see myself in everybody, because we all want, not to get too deep, we all want living the same experience. But it inspired me because I knew who she was before the book. You know what I mean? So I didn't know what she would have battled in against. You know, I don't know her own story.
Yeah.
The fact that we came from the same environments and you were able to put something out, you were able to get something to the world that no one could take back from you, is awesome. And it's great that you could create something and no one could take that shit back from you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that stamp that you was here. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you live on planet Earth. You know what I mean?
Documentation is definitely important when it comes to just culture in general. Like a lot of people like to say the culture, you know, whatever that means, but just the culture of just documentation of that is so important. It has to, you know, especially when it's documented by the people, the active participants. Not just, it's cool when people can, from the outside, look it in, see a culture and document it, but to be, a primary resource of a culture and document it, you know, nobody can ever change your narrative. Especially these days, you can't really lie about things or make things up, because it's easy to find out the true originators. So yes, documentation is definitely important. What did your parents or your friends say about this? I mean, you lost a lot of your social life, but when the products came out, when the work came out and it was tangible, did people understand, finally understand?
Yeah, they're like, what the hell? Because, like I said, I definitely wasn't double English in middle school. You know what I mean? Like, so everyone is like,
everybody's looking at me like, throwback.
What the fuck? You think you wrote a book? Because most people talk about it, but you actually did it. You know what I mean? It's like, alright, cool. And then I got a lot of genuine love, and I got a lot of, you know, like, what the fuck? You know, like, you know, what the fuck? Alright. But it was dope, you know what I mean? My family's like, where's the money at? You know what I mean?
They don't understand, it's a process.
Of course. But this shit is cool. Everything about it, the journey is cool, man. This is my life. Like I took my life into my own hands, and we're not waiting on luck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What do you think it takes to become an author? Because you don't come from that background.
Just discipline.
Just a writer in general, author, discipline.
You gotta be passionate. I say you gotta be passionate about what you're writing about. You know what I mean? You're not gonna, if you're not truly passionate about it, you're gonna lose interest in it. Maybe a week into whatever you're writing about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, I would say discipline, passion. You gotta be able to take constructive criticism. I would say it don't take much. If you truly want to be an author, then you already have what it takes to be an author. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I can't tell you how to write a story because we all got different parents.
But for kids who, just people who were like you, who weren't the best writers or in double English, like you said, they might wanna know more about, you know, say they wanna become a writer. How did they get out of that feeling, you know, of potentially feeling like they can't do it because of, you know, not being historically, you know, good academically.
So, back to what I was saying earlier, one of the first few things that I noticed in school was everyone that we learned about, nobody that we learned about followed the rules.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You gotta obviously be educated enough to know how to play the game. Once you know how to play the game, switch it up. Mm-hmm. And when I say that to say, like, what was the question one time?
Oh, just asking because you weren't always, you know, what does it take if, you know, you were not the best student? So somebody else who may have been like you growing up.
All right, so I'm sorry. Yes, I was conscious. So what I say that to say this, so like, nobody, I don't want to get too deep, right?
Oh, you could.
So like, I feel like, one of the reasons why I wasn't always a good academically school kid is because I can't blame my church, but it's also because I went to church as a kid and they gave me another reason to life. They told me that life is about serving God and this and that. And when you go to school, God don't live in school. You know what I mean?
That's just like a Catholic school.
I didn't go to Catholic school. I went to public school. And then even when you go outside, like, I live so much different lives growing up.
Yeah.
And I've been around so much different people and lifestyles growing up, where I always knew, no one ever said what life is really about. And everything that we are using and watching and consuming, somebody made it. You know what I mean? Somebody either made it up, somebody either created it, made it up, or put it in motion. But like, no one told them it was okay to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's because they wanted to do it. So like, disregard whatever your school base may be, no one can stop you as a human being to be whoever you want to be. You know what I mean? You can't limit yourself because of what other people may think. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just follow the crowd. 80% of everybody just following the crowd. No one is really themselves. So if I would just say, just believe in yourself. That's the key to everything, is believe in yourself, because whatever is meant to happen will happen. You know what I mean? You may try to be an author, and then you may find out you want to be a filmmaker in the process of it.
Yeah.
So it's like,
speaking about that, you know, becoming a filmmaker, becoming an auteur, a writer, a screenwriter, and director. You know, not only did you write the film, but you directed it. How do you go from never even thinking you were gonna become an author of books to writing a film? Yeah. Well, how do you end up becoming a film writer, a screenwriter?
I better know myself. During my first pandemic, I've had time to learn how to write screenplays. I was actually going to hire somebody to write a screenplay for me.
Yeah.
And my homeboy told me to save your money. He said, stop being lazy. Just learn the new format. You already know how to tell stories. Once you can execute this, you can make money on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You can literally hire, people will literally hire you to write screenplays. And follow his fucking advice. And I want to say, maybe like a month or two after, I read a book called Save the Last Cat. Watched a whole bunch of different tutorials on YouTube. I had some money saved up for my job.
Yeah.
Quit, hired a production team, and we hit the road, and it felt exciting because it was like I was going into the unknown. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know what the next, I could, as much as you plan, without like a job behind you or some shit, you don't really know what's next. And everything is, I was a director, I produced it, and I wrote it. So like a lot of the, I had no one to call when things got sour. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was an exciting and scary experience as well.
Talk about that fear. That fear of, it's so much fear, like quitting your job. You have money saved, but you know, how long do you know, you don't know when or if you're ever gonna make money off of the film, or just the fear of what you're writing and directing not being good. Let's talk about that fear.
Shit, some fear is real. Cause off rip, I knew I'm gonna be judged in general for it being my first film, for even trying. Just for even trying, you're gonna get judged. You know, the motherfuckers gonna watch you, but like, look at this nigga trying.
Yeah.
Look at this nigga trying, son. And niggas will laugh at you for trying. And that's the funny shit. That's why you gotta take constructive, you gotta be able to take constructive criticism. You can't live in your fear. If you live in your fear, you're not living at all.
Or it's a bar.
You have to take chances. Because like that's like, you know what I mean? Like I said, I ain't waiting on luck, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I learned how to do it. We wanna take our future into our own hands. I was lucky enough to get people who were passionate about the project. So it wasn't just all me. In general, you know, everyone that was involved wanted the same outcome as me. And I was blessed to have that. You know what I mean? It made my job, it made my life easier. But things happen, and you gotta be able to, like, it wasn't just sunny sailing throughout the project, but you have to be able to prepare for things like that and not let things like that kill you. I mean, can't let the potholes stop you from getting to your destination.
Who are the people that you seek counsel from when you are going through that fear creatively? Did you grow up around a lot of creative people?
My cousin, my cousin is big on music.
Yeah.
He was always like freestyling and shit like that. He had been thinking I could be a rapper one time. My other cousin is a basketball player. But like artistic wise, like as far as like writing on paper, be like and be able to tell me a story, I didn't have none of that going around me growing up. One of my older friends, his name is Saeed, he's a wrestler actually. Threw this out. I met later on in life, I met him when I was maybe 23, 24. He was one of those people that was optimistic about life, and he reminded me, because I had So like he was like your break from your norm.
Yeah.
He was like your nerd, like your comical nerd, but he'll fuck you up.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of those dudes where it's like, alright. And he just had this optimistic view on life where it was like, you could be anything you want. And he reminded me that. Like, if you wanted to be, I think I said this in another interview, but like, if you wanted to be a prime major, you could dead ass go dress up, go to California, and go be prime major for a day.
Yeah.
Nothing's stopping you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's all about you and what fear is stopping you. The only reason why you wouldn't do it if you didn't want to be a prime major, because you fear that you're losing friends or something like that. But like, honestly, who are you living for? Who are you living for at this point? I'm not advising you guys to go to the prime major.
As a, you know, keep saying film, your movie's called Love Gone Viral. So, and that was recently released in December. What date was that?
December 19th.
And I've been seeing clips and promotional things on Instagram about it for a while, maybe for about over a year before the film was released. And I just love the fact that people from Spring Valley, people from Rockingham, people from Spring Valley specifically are in the film, people that don't even have an acting background in the film, you know, gave them a chance, and a few other people who have a small acting background. But Love Gone Viral, speak about the process of writing that and directing that and just everything that led up to it finally being released.
The story itself was originally a short story. I wrote it to make one of my coworkers laugh at work. I said, like, everyone, a lot of people in my life just serve different purposes. In a way, like, my coworker, she would motivate me. Not even like, she would just motivate me to continue writing. And she would just read my stories every week she was in. So with that being said, when I learned how to write a screenplay, I had options to pick from. I remember her specifically loving that story. So I tweaked the story a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I had maybe one or two people proofread it as well. They had a thumbs up. First thing I did was go hire a production company. And, well, I did a casting report before I hired.
How do you cast? You said that you try to find characters that are close. You try to find actors that are close to the characters.
Yeah.
How do you do that without offending certain people? Because, you know, certain characters may not be portrayed as the best. So then when you say, well, let me pick you because you're most like this character, how do you explain that artistically to an actor?
That was a learning curve for me as well, because I definitely didn't know how to do it the right way the first few times. So I definitely put my friendships on, I jeopardized my friendships for roles. I promised a role before actually seeing them audition. And then when someone actually auditioned for it and they were good, I would have to go back with the
Michael,
you know, like, yo, you know, I told you this, but homeboy right here, he, you know what I mean? And then I look like a funny dude, you know what I mean? So like, this is, I had to learn that, and it was tough. So right now, I just don't promise, I don't make promises. You audition, and if it works, it works. But the first time for me, the first time, that was my mistake. It's just my experience. I was making promises for this, my first film.
Yeah.
And I should have. But the casting call wise, you just, I'm from Rockland.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a Rockland film. You would consider this a Rockland film. So like I kind of had people in mind while I was reading the script,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't that difficult for me in general to like find certain people for certain roles, because I had trust in their abilities to execute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you know everybody in the film? You know everyone?
No, I didn't know everybody. I met my main character through the casting process. I met the production company, honestly, during the whole filming process, before the filming process, really.
Yeah.
I knew mostly everybody, but our bond got stronger during the film because we had our backs against the walls. You know what I mean? It was us. Trying to make things happen. The world is shut down and we outside making a movie.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. Well,
and then you got it in the movies. You know, I've seen some movies where they'll incorporate the fact that we're in a pandemic in the movie and people will be wearing masks, or TV shows, people will be wearing masks in the show, or you might see a scene where it's a clip of the news and then news anchors talking about the pandemic. But then other films, other TV shows that I've watched, it's almost like it's a completely different world than the world that we're living in. In that world, in the movie, no one's wearing masks. The pandemic doesn't even really exist, but in our world, you know, everybody's walking around with masks. So was that, did you decide to, because in your movie, you know, basically COVID doesn't come up. So, was that just a conscious decision?
Yeah, because it's funny because right now I feel like this face mask thing is gonna be the new normal. But
yeah.
Like, when we were shooting it, I was thinking like if we do get out this pandemic, I don't want the film to only stand for the pandemic, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
might not age well.
Exactly. So I kind of wanted to leave it alone. And I was lucky enough to get venues where we were able to keep a certain amount of people in it.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? And it was all able to work out.
I always hear about acquiring licenses and permits, I guess permits to record, to film certain places. Did you have to get any of those?
I had to get permission through pretty much everywhere. My church, the church didn't see, I had to get permission, the hospital.
That was your church?
That was my church.
Oh, okay.
It was a friend of mine's. And it's funny because that church took the longest for the green light. I personally, for every location that you seen there. In the film, I personally went to every location and asked them, can we shoot here? And it was either yes or no, or, you know, get the runaround. The church, I got the runaround for about 2 months in general. I didn't even know who was able to shoot it. And I was venting to a friend, and they were like, yo, I worked at a church.
Yeah.
It just, like, literally,
wow.
Like, I'm literally
stars apart.
I'm literally just like venting. Yeah, I work at a church. Why do you say it like I can bend up the world? What? The rest is history. But like, I definitely had to push you for everything. I'm not trying to be a year into the film and somebody watched it and be like, oh, you may say this, you may say you're doing all of this, and now we're back to square one. You gotta get that out of the way.
What writers, film writers, directors influence you to write? Love Don't Write By Rose. Is there a movie or a style of movie that you drew inspiration from?
Not for that movie specifically. And you know why I actually love this movie in general? Because it is cut from a different cloth. Like, you can kind of, it's not as deep as Baby Boy. If I could compare the movie to anything, I would say maybe Baby Boy, with Jodie and his baby mom in the whole situation. But I've never seen.
I didn't even think about it like that. It is kind of similar in a way.
I've never seen a woman drag her baby dad before. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, but it happens.
But yeah, I mean, Beth did that in Baby Boy with Jodie. But she took him back.
But this, the concept of what was going on just sounded so bizarre when I was writing it. And I was like, yo, this is crazy. Like, as any story that makes me like laugh and like smile as I'm writing it, it's just like, yo, this is crazy. This is funny. I just enjoyed it. I can't compare it to anything, but I've never seen somebody get dragged like that and be defeated like that and still win at the end. It was different. And then you have his cousin here who thinks he's helping him. He's just making life worse.
I guess his cousin was helping him in his own way. You know, he might have not knew how to be vulnerable with him. So, I mean, he took him in, that was help.
Of course.
But, you know, as he's in, he's laying on the couch, he's just cooking him every day. You stink, blah, blah, blah. Your lease is up. So, I guess, you know, I guess if you could compare it to Baby Boy, His cousin is Jodie's mom.
Nah, he definitely, Jamal was definitely his guardian angel, you could say, in some type of way, because he needed somebody to keep it real with him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And not all of us have that. And not all of us have something that's going to sit and put up.
Hold him accountable.
And hold him accountable, yeah.
I want to go back to your books. Your first book was Blood Cousins. That was 2017. And then your second book was The Wolf in Me in 2020. That's a 3-year gap between those books. Why was it a 3-year gap?
Contemplating on writing the second version of Blood Cousins, honestly. At the same time, trying to also catch up with my social life because I feel like I took a hit. I want to say also just thinking about the right story.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Wolf in Me. It just so happened that one of my best friends had lost a dog to a car accident, and she loved that dog. The dog name is Nala, the name of the werewolf. And I, like that weekend, like the whole idea of everything just came to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started
that the mix of genres with that book, it's a fiction book, but it's almost like a crime drama at the same time, and then at the same time it's science fiction, and it's not science fiction, fantasy. It's fantasy, so that right there will broaden whatever you could, you know, go into in the future and how you'll be perceived. So that was a conscious decision also, like?
For the time gap?
No, not the time gap, but just the blending of genres.
Yeah. Man, I was so excited when I first started writing. When I started writing, and the first four people said, "Your shit is good," I was gassed. And at this point, I'm like throwing everything into, like, if you see like the thickness of my book, it's like,
the first book is pretty, it's pretty big.
Yeah, like I was all over the place. Like I'm not gonna say anything that came out of my head. The worst part of that whole process was the editing process. When I got my first editor, and she told me that I don't need to be saying all of this extra stuff, and I'm just like, oh, I gotta take it away. And it just, that was probably like the most heartbreaking moment of writing. That is the most heartbreaking moment of writing.
Oh, I know, my experience.
What can't stay? And there'll be moments, like, there'll be pages that got deleted, but I've done spent like maybe a day or two even coming up with this shit. Like, you know what I mean? And just like that, it's rap.
But it worked out, I'm sure. It worked out for the better. Of course, of course. And you listened to that editor, so you valued their opinion. You had to hire an editor for Love More Viral. What was the editing process for The Wolf and Me and Blood Cousins? Like, how did you say, how did you decide, like, I'm gonna appoint this person to edit this?
The person that edited Wolf and Me is a different person that edited Blood Cousins. The first person that, my first editor was the Universe, of course. But I remember that he was Starbucks. He was at Starbucks. And I had my laptop getting a drink. I honestly don't remember how the conversation sparked. But shortly, I met my editor at Starbucks while she was getting coffee.
Good.
Believe it or not, she edited the short story for The Wolf and Me. not the script, but the actual short story that I wrote. She definitely was one of the editors. Like, she edited that story as well. The process, right now, I feel like I was thinking about writing my third book. I have stories that I could put together and give everyone, you know, like a little surprise. I feel like right now I would just find someone that sounds similar to you. You know what I mean? Like someone that can catch what you're saying, so it's not so much.
Yeah, they heard your voice.
Yeah, back and forth. Fiverr works though. I think I said it right. Fiverr. That works.
There's so many resources, you know, to just do things, to make a living independently. You know, you take off. You don't have to have this humongous production. So it definitely helps, you know, do it yourself model. I mean, you put out both your books, you publish both your books through Amazon. With the independent run, you might, it was almost like a masterpiece of books. So, in the future, do you ever, when you write more books, are your intentions to have your books published by a major publishing house like Simon & Schuster, one of those?
Hopefully not. I'm not so pressed on it because I understand that I do have a different voice.
Yeah.
That some companies may feel like I'm what's the word I'm looking for? Liability?
Yeah.
Like somewhat of a liability. They don't know how confident my voice is. You know what I mean? So the independent route is cool because I don't need their permission to put out my work. You know what I mean? And if you like it, you like it. No.
Yeah.
But like I don't have to wait on someone else, okay. But hopefully one day if I get a publishing deal, great. Great. But it's not stopping me. Trust that. It's definitely not stopping.
Forgot what I was gonna ask. What is the importance of character development in your books? Because I feel that when I started to read Blood Cousins, chapter 9 is where it really started to make that change when the two main characters they found out that their dads died. I think that was chapter 9. So you know, and you start to see every chapter you rotate between a different character. So how important is that to you to incorporate those methods into writing your books?
Not so much important. Character development is definitely important though. That can make or break your story.
Yeah.
You need to have strong characters in your writing and stories. I think it's important to know who your characters are before you start writing. It's funny, know your characters before you start writing, but don't be afraid to try it. You know, when I say that, I mean like when I write, I could have my whole outline finished, but like the characters would tell me what they would want to say, or what they want to do while I'm writing it. So like, the story would change. Like, it's not the same story that I got into it with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the characters themselves are screaming for their own voice. So just take time, you know what I mean? Take time and know what you're about to write before you get into it, so everything can come out good, like a good masterpiece.
Like a go at?
A masterpiece.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't wanna rush anything. You want all your characters to be heard the right way. You know, their stories to be told good. You know what I mean?
Do you feel like you have a masterpiece
so far? feel like all of my work, I don't have a favorite so far. Like, that's, I don't have a favorite book.
Yeah.
I only have one film so far. The film right now, you could say it's my masterpiece right now, because I feel like I tweaked. I was able to, in the right way, to get grown people to work together. Like, the books is all me.
Yeah.
The books is all me. I feel that all the time. And it's the fact that I was able to get a hold of grown adults, get over their schedule, give them something that, give them a role.
Yeah.
And they saw the same vision as me. And some characters even took their roles into their own hands. You know what I mean? And I think it was dope that I was able to get people from the town. If they weren't even acting, they had their clothing lines in it. They had their music playing.
Yeah, I understand.
And it was just one big, magical, artistic moment. Like, at this moment, I feel like it's one of those thin artistic times. Like, we're always gonna have that. Like, as far as whatever comes out from my film going forward, this moment right now is dope because we all lifted each other.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if it was done before, I might have overlooked it, but right now, I feel like it's the first time we all came together for something positive.
Yeah.
And
it's, you mean like in the history of like you living in Rockland? Like,
that's, I'm pretty sure we all come together for positive things. But yeah. I feel like for art, for an artistic reason.
Yeah.
Like, we put together a project that didn't exist before.
And so many people.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, we manifested a vision that didn't exist before. Mm-hmm. And the message, low-key, as little as it is or as big as it is, the message would mean something to somebody one day. You know what I mean? Somebody going through whatever it's going through. And I messed it up. I said the character's my name, Drew. Somebody could be going through what Drew is going through. It's going through it. They watching him finally get the balls to say, fuck, I'm not going this
anymore. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And take life up and go somewhere else to get their shit together.
Do you think that Jude is weak or is Jude strong?
I feel like, it's not even that he's, there's a part of him that's, he's weak, but he's not weak. What I say that is, I feel like he should have dated a woman more of his speed.
Like, who he ended up with?
Yeah, at the end. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, if you're not with the right person, you're always going to be tested. Like, you know what I mean? Because there's really, not everyone has to be gangster. Not everyone has to be a rapper, or not everyone has to be a street person. You know what I mean? And if your woman understands who you are, she wouldn't put you in those type of situations.
If she respects you.
If she respects you, she wouldn't put you in those type of situations. So, I can't say he's weak, but he definitely made poor decisions, and it cost him.
What do you think it cost him?
It cost him a lot. It cost him his job.
Yeah.
It cost him his peace. It cost him, it cost his son having, a real family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I feel like there are people that are truthful around. I wouldn't take, I'm a weak guy, but it's only from society.
Yeah, traditional standards of what masculinity is. He's weak.
Exactly, but he's a typical. Honestly, he was working his job. I don't know what Tamika wanted from him.
Yeah, she wanted. You know, that happens sometimes. You know, somebody get with you, and whoever they, you know, that you think that they're with you for you, but you know, then they try to change you. So that might, you know, if you were to go deeper into the storyline, you know, and you know, just for like the viewers, and just hypothesize, maybe that you know, she wanted. I forgot the name of the Tamika's man, the new guy.
Quay.
Yeah, she really wanted Quay in Jude's body.
but that
happens. Do you know any stories similar to the story of Jude and Tamika that you would draw inspiration from?
Nah, that was totally off the brain.
Yeah.
That was totally off the brain.
It's good because a lot of storylines in movies now, I feel like it's just recycled storylines, either an adaptation of a book that came out, or adaptation of a comic book, adaptation of the same movie, but this new one is a remake, or adaptation of a TV show that they turned into a movie, a biopic. So, you know, it's an original storyline. And you know, for you to be doing that independently is definitely a breath of fresh air. The end of the movie, well, the beginning and the end of the movie, the slogan is created with life lessons. So, why did you choose that?
That's not me. That's my cameraman's production. Yeah, I actually love how it looks, and I love the name of it. His name is Kelvin. If you were to shoot with them, you are shooting with creative with life lessons.
Oh, so that's what, it's not like a... Okay, I thought that was like something that you added as like the moral of the story or something like that.
It worked out.
Yeah.
I think that's why he himself grew invested into the project as well, because he loved the story of it, he loved the message of it, and he loved the people that were a part of it as well. So it all played out perfectly into the universe.
Have you ever, when writing Love Gone Viral, Blood Cousins or The Wolf and Me, said, man, fuck this, like, I'm not doing this no more, like, I'm gonna scrap this whole thing, I don't care how much money I spend, it's too much of a hassle, too much of a headache, heartache.
Oh yeah, it's not a typical hustle, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
All my friends, the typical, my friends are standing, the typical guys, motherfuckers outside, everybody's hustling, you know what I mean? Everybody's trying to do different things. I'm out here trying to do something that wasn't even cool when we were growing up.
Yeah, considered lame or something.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So like, I'm all the way going against even me, because I wasn't doing this growing up. But I just feel passionate about writing things that I like to write about. So it's hard to, like, you can't flex it, and you know what I mean?
You can't flex
with your, you know what I mean? But once it's done, yeah, it looks cool. But in the process, it gets overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to tell somebody that I'm not, like, there. Like, I'm mentally not there because I'm somewhere else. And not that all of this stuff don't matter, but like the story matters the most right now. And it sounds selfish, and it sounds like, you know, it sounds crazy. So like, it's always gonna be crazy until it works. You know what I mean? I'm always sounding crazy, I look crazy until it works. That's the life that I'm always, that's the life I'm living right now.
That's the life of a creator.
Yeah.
For sure. And like you said earlier in the beginning of the episode, you said that look at the most important people in the world, people that change the world, they didn't follow the rules. So, you know what?
No, I'm just saying, you can't follow the rules and expect a different life. Mm-hmm. But that rules were set for you to be like someone else.
The title "Love Gone Viral" is it's very timely because when things become popular and they become popular on social media, it says going viral. That term, that was a word that existed before the internet. But in a medical capacity, like with viruses, stuff like that. But it makes sense, you know, if I don't want to spoil the movie for anybody who didn't watch it, but what does that title mean to you? If, you know, just to, without spoiling the premise or without spoiling the movie for somebody.
Love on a grand platform. Like, I would, when I hear love on Barbara, I just think about love that's on a big screen. Like, we are all watching the love story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we see what's going on. There it is.
Which is what happened.
Your home is a seat, but it's a glass one. You know what I mean? I can see what's going on inside your relationship.
What feedback have you been getting, positive and negative?
I haven't gotten any negative yet. If anything, people are just excited. Everyone's just excited. Everyone wants to work to it. Everyone. If there was anything negative, I'm thinking about it, it probably was, we could have gotten a better ending. Yeah, but that's not even, because it could, that's not even like, even a negative, because it's one of those, I feel like the way we ended it was a cliffhanger. I feel like if we wanted to pick it up, we could pick it up at any point. As far as positive, everyone loved it. Everyone was part two. Everyone is amazed at what we could do as a team. I hope I inspire people to shoot down on my stuff as well.
Blood Cousins and the Wolf of Me, what was the positive and negative feedback that you received from those movies?
I like Love Gone Viral. Everyone. Shit, everyone loved the ending to both my books, to be real with you. The Wolf in Me broke brings people hearts, and I'm people were giving them like out of way. The Wolf in Me ended. I'm pretty bad at ending stories. And, you know, one of my things is my thing. I don't always like a happy ending. I don't think it's always realistic.
It's not.
You know what I mean? So like if I could find a way to like beat the cliche, I'm gonna do it every time. Every time I'm gonna find a way. I feel like the way Love on Barbie was pretty cliche, if anything. But as far as my stories, they, everyone's been invested into Isaiah and Joaquin.
Yeah.
And they want to know what's going on. They're ready for more, more shit.
I mean, I was just saying how there's not a lot of original stories in film, but let me contradict myself. You could make a film adaptation of one of your books.
What's that?
Yeah, you can do that.
I want to do one for Blood Cousins. I want to remake one for Blood Cousins, but I just want to, when I know 100% what I'm doing, that's when I'm like, I don't want to sell a cheap version of it.
Yeah. Have you ever experienced writer's block?
Of course. All the time. This is standard.
Yeah. What do you think are those blocks psychologically?
It's a moment for me to go do something else.
Yeah.
It's a moment for me to break from wherever I'm doing.
We'll live life.
Usually it's funny because I would have writer's block, and then sometimes it varies. Like, I have writer's block for a day. Sometimes it go up to a couple months, to be honest with you. But once you break free of it,
it starts flowing.
Yeah, it's like it's really flowing. And it's like it's God telling me to go live, because sometimes, like, well, I don't even know why it took me so long to even come back to this. Like, you know what I mean? And you can't rush it. We don't want to rush mistakes anyhow.
Art is a reflection of reality, so you're not gonna really put out your best art if, you know, you didn't live enough life. You know, and people also wanna know that you live life. You can consume what you put out. So it's also good that you were a different person 10 years ago, or you were a person that 10 years ago people could be like surprised that you're this person now. But that helps you. That's actually advantageous to you. What's next for you? What's next for Omar D. Hardwick?
I'm definitely shooting another movie.
Yeah.
I want to get into app development, personally.
App development?
I do have ideas for apps.
It's cool.
I'm just waiting. I'm trying to find the right thing. You know, maybe y'all watching this and make a freaking app. Holler at me, son. I got some ideas. I work now in the medical field. I'm a medical assistant, which is pretty dope. I draw blood and help my doctor all day. So I like the fact that I feel like I'm making, I know I'm not saving no lives, but I'm a part of a system that's helping people.
You know? Yeah.
And so I'm not writing and I'm not filming. I'm somewhere is helping someone get the medicine, or I'm living some type of purpose throughout my day.
Yeah.
Just more work, man. Just be prepared for more work. Nothing ever stops. Nothing's gonna stop. And we're gonna put out another movie, hopefully next year. I got something that's more intense and more jaw-dropping for you guys.
And why do words matter to you?
Because that's what separates us from other animals.
Mm.
We are the only species on Earth that can manifest. We are the only species that can think about an action before we do it and actually manifest whatever we want. Yeah. And a lot of people forget that. We are somebody on this planet. And
complex species.
We are a complex species, and after you go through all these everyday trials of distractions, you just forget yourself. You a dead ass forget yourself. You just gotta remember what you are, what your purpose is, and what you wanna die for. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you die, what do you regret? You know? What do you regret not doing?
That's all?
That's all for me. Is that all for me? Or I still think he's mad at me.
Yeah. Yo, so thank you for coming. Thank you for coming, Words Madly. You for coming down here to Brooklyn and being a part of this. Definitely learn some things, very insightful. And stay tuned, man. It is Akil and got Omar. Words Matter.
I appreciate you, man.
My heart, all day.
Of course.